Hello, everyone. Let me start by saying we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. So I'm Edward Morales, a client partner at Cinzi, and welcome to today's Cinzi Spotlight, featuring an exclusive conversation with Bud Langham, Chief Strategy and Innovation Officer at Encompass Home Health and Hospice. So I will lead today's exclusive conversation with Bud on the future home health patient. And we are very excited to have Bud take the time to share with us today his insights as he brings a wealth of experience with us today. Today's virtual event is being recorded, and the recording will be sent to everyone early next week. So for those who have joined us live today, just a quick note here for housekeeping. All participants are muted. So if you do have a question, please use the Q&A tool in this webinar platform, and we'll respond to those questions at the end of this session. Okay. So with that, we'll turn it over to Bud for first an overview of Encompass Health, followed by today's spotlight topics relating to the future home health patient. Thank you, Bud.
Thank you. It is really, really good to be here. Always happy to do an overview of Encompass. So we started as a home health agency over 20 years ago now. April Anthony, our founder and CEO, started with a single location here in Dallas, Texas. Through the years, with multiple acquisitions and a lot of organic growth, we've become the fourth largest provider of Medicare certified home health services in the country. And I believe the 10th or 11th on hospice, you have to check me on my stats there. It's had a significant amount of growth. We're now in 31 or two states. We have about 350 total locations across the country for home health and hospice. And really excited to be here today. Very grateful for the opportunity to talk about the future of home health.
Fantastic. We appreciate that, Bud. So with that, I know we have some very relevant topics to review here. And by way of really the enhanced continuum of care, and we are now in what we consider, I guess, the post-COVID era, seeing that we've had really this era for the greater part of the last year. Obviously, a lot has changed, and so we'll get into some of the specifics of how you have pivoted and how you found successes and how you've uncovered opportunities in finding those successes. And so as we move along here, love to be able to talk a little bit more about that. So I'll let you talk more about the continuum of care and how that is enhanced with Encompass today.
Yeah, thank you. Gosh, and you said post-COVID era. It doesn't feel like that just yet, as evidence of the fact that I was supposed to be doing this from my office today, and I found my way into quarantine because one of my kiddos is ill. So I am looking forward to the post-COVID era for sure. In terms of our enhanced continuum of care, our focus since 2015 when we joined forces with what was then called HealthSouth has really been about taking care of the patients in the post-acute space. And we've worked really hard to do that through our overlapping markets across the country with our home health hospice and inpatient rehab facilities. And we've executed on that really, really well. We think we've been able to bring a better way to care to patients by making sure that when they move from one of our inpatient rehab facilities to one of our home health agencies, that we have a unique ability to perform a safe, effective transition of care and keep them within our continuum. And doing that, we've been able to deliver not only great outcomes for patients, but also great outcomes for our partners in keeping the cost of care down, readmissions and acute care hospitalizations down as well. So we're excited about what we're doing. We're excited for the future as well.
Thank you for that. So with that, let's peel that back a couple layers here. And so the topics for today, very relevant here, perfect segue into it, which is starting out with choosing the right provider. We'll also talk about the journey specifically that you've had at Encompass Health with telehealth and RPM. And then we'll touch on the future of post-acute care and right and how the landscape has changed, well, presumably forever, right? So with that, let's go ahead and get into first how it's been transformed. Let's talk about what you envision the future of the home health patient looking like, starting with choosing the right provider. So what should you be looking for or what should a patient be looking for rather for in a home health provider?
Yeah, I think it's important. I think it's important to ask the physician that you're working with who they prefer. What outcomes have they seen with various providers? We go back to the checklist for home health providers that CMS has published years ago. I think you can still find it on the CMS website. That indicates, check and see if the physician or the hospital or discharge planner recommends a particular provider and ask why. Hopefully it is really focused around outcomes. It's focused around service and their experience with that provider. We think that's really, really important. So get a recommendation. That's number one. The second is really look for a provider that provides high quality care. And there's a wealth of information available to the public and also to referral sources and other providers about the quality services that home health providers impart to their patient populations. You can see that on carecompare.com. You can see that in a variety of places. So I think focus on a good recommendation from a provider that's worked with a home health agency, and then do your research and take a look at their outcomes and the data that's publicly available. It's also a good idea to reach out to the home health agency and ask what separates you from other home health agencies? What do you offer specific to my particular need? Some agencies are very focused on particular populations. Some providers, some agencies are more general in scope, but they have multiple programs to take care of patient needs. So I think it's always good to do a little virtual tour and give the agency a call and talk to them.
Yeah, very good. So that's something that you guys are very aware that it's going to be posted out, readily available via Google searches, via, as you said, there's active agencies out there also posting that kind of information, but also word of mouth that you touched on, which is critically important in the branding and awareness. And so that's something that travels a lot further than any posting ever could, which is the word of mouth and a great experience. And so certainly branding is something that we hear. So we appreciate you sharing that insight. So with that, as far as is the evaluation of care delivery changing just because of the pandemic? Where are you seeing that as far as the evaluation of care delivery and the new expectation, as it were, for adoption of technologies?
Yeah, I'm not sure if the evaluation is changing that significantly. High quality providers are high quality providers. We have during the pandemic seen more of a focus on referral sources and patients and families looking for agencies that can meet specific needs, especially the COVID population. So do you have the right equipment? Do you have PPE? Are you testing your clinicians? We have seen some of that, and I think that's good. That's healthy. But in terms of the overall evaluation, I think it's remained relatively unchanged in that agencies that provide high quality care, that provide timely care, so you're not waiting 48, 72 hours to get out and see a patient. You're actually seeing them the day they come home from the hospital or as soon as you get that referral within 24 hours of getting the referral. That's really important. So I think agencies that meet those needs of referral sources and patients are still the agencies that that people are turning to, especially in times like these.
Yeah, so the longstanding tried and true is going to be the high level of service and the expectation that comes about with that, which is the starts of care and being readily available and willing to take those on. It sounds like real time within that 24-hour time frame. So yeah, fantastic.
Timeliness is a real differentiator. And so in some cases with the pandemic, that's been a challenge with staffing issues and with all the various activities happening with the markets with the pandemic. But timeliness of care is critical. That is an element of customer service that has not changed. When a referral is made for a patient who's in is struggling, needs care, that care needs to get there timely. And so at Encompass Health, that's always been a huge focus for us, get there as quickly as possible.
Yep, absolutely. And that goes along with, again, the branding, the experience, and the expectation that you guys are going to be readily available and you have the resources and the professionalism on standby. So fantastic. So with that, the pandemic has brought about, right, the need to pivot quickly in adapting service delivery with the integration of new technologies, okay? So shifting a little bit to those technologies, Talk about Encompass Health and the experience that you guys have had with the journey in telehealth and remote patient monitoring, and how maybe some specifics on how technology, has care delivery has changed.
Yeah, so we've definitely seen a change there. And gosh, our journey as it relates to telehealth and remote patient monitoring and technologies like that, it's been ongoing for a while. And so we've never really wanted to be on the bleeding edge of that kind of change, especially in the absence of a compelling business case historically, where there wasn't really reimbursement for RPM, there wasn't really reimbursement for telehealth services. So we haven't wanted to be on the bleeding edge. We've been piloting technologies through the years, didn't really find one that we felt like was transformative. And so rather than being kind of a first mover, we've adopted more of an approach of trying to be a fast follower and looking for a technology that allows us to continue to be who we are in terms of our culture of care, integrates well with our culture of care. But it's been a long journey. We're certainly going down that road with Cinzi. We're very optimistic about our early results with Cinzi. As it relates to remote patient monitoring, we have not adopted a global RPM approach. We're still looking for technology out there, and we've vetted multiple technologies. I'm quite stubborn when it comes to the technologies, and maybe a little difficult, but I'm not really looking for a technology that you pull out of a box and you leave a pulse oximeter and a blood pressure cuff and a scale, and you leave all these various devices in a patient's home and you allow the patient to activate the devices and engage with the devices. I'm more hopeful for a technology that allows us to monitor biometric data passively, almost unseen or unfelt by patient populations. So make it easy for them, a wearable, a patch, a watch, something affordable, something easy, something that's not disruptive, doesn't need to have a battery charged every 4 to 6 hours. We're trying to be a little less intrusive into the patient's life. I don't want to be a logistics company or an inventory. I don't want to be in the inventory management business and cleaning devices and calibrating and sending them out. That's not at the core of what we do. We provide really high quality in-home care through our professional providers around the country, nurses, therapists, and social workers, and home health aides. And so we've been a little slow on the RPM solution, looking for opportunities to pilot technologies and looking for that just right use case. But the pandemic has certainly opened a lot of doors between payers and now offering to reimburse some of these services, and seeing some of the change in SNF at home, hospital at home approaches, as an example. There are certainly some tailwinds for those kind of programs that are going to nudge us more into that space and make us more kind of wholeheartedly consider those types of solutions. So I do think they're going to continue to be a larger and larger part of what we do at Encompass Health over the next several months and years.
Yep. And you mentioned there, just going back to, again, passively, you don't want it to be disruptive. And so is that something that you guys had an experience with? Is that just a thought you have, kind of a vision going in to selecting a vendor? Or was there an experience that led you to greater utilization or higher adoption?
Yeah, we've had multiple experiences with different technologies, and primarily through referral sources and strategic partners asking us to consider some of those options. But it's been challenging to integrate in a way that didn't disrupt the business of care, providing care in patients' homes. So we have had multiple experiences. Like I said, we've done multiple pilots, and we continue to monitor the evidence, which is what really compels me. And to date, while I routinely get case studies and cohort studies and anecdotal reports of how some technologies have completely transformed care and led to incredible outcomes. While I continue to get those, I haven't seen really compelling evidence that shows that they're that effective, at least the devices that are out there today. I am optimistic. I'm unmoved in the absence of data. So we continue to explore. We're always looking for that just right technology and talking to multiple folks. We probably will continue to do pilots here and there until we find that right technology. So on the yep. telehealth side, we've been much more active in doing the virtual visits, especially telephonic visits. Over the last year or so, we've seen that our numbers there increase pretty dramatically and with good results. But the reality for us is while we do that, we don't want to lose that personal touch. So right. you're never going to see Encompass Health completely go to a model of virtual care. Our patients and our partners, our referral sources and strategic relationships continue to tell us it's the in-person care that they need and that they want. And we think that's what really makes the difference. So figuring out how to take these technologies to create more touch points, to create a better ability to monitor a patient and quickly react to a need by exception. That's what we're really looking for. And that perfect kind of way to engage patients around their preferred communication channel. And for some of our patients, they've said, don't call me. Don't message me. Right. We only want to have in-person encounters. And for others, they welcome virtual visits and the use of technology to provide their care. And for others, your messaging is very comfortable to them. And I think we'll see the broader uptake of those technologies increase over time. But today, it is you need to have more of a multi-channel approach. And so we're trying to be good stewards of our resources, of our employees, and our patients, and our time. And to do it in a way that's effective and not distracting from our core business of care.
Yeah, and as a follow-up to that, and being good stewards of employees, patients, and time we none of us can get enough of, it seems. Given that, there is clearly a vetting process that takes place within Encompass and within technologies. I would be curious, and as with the participants, to know what your specific process looks like in selecting a virtual care provider of something with this magnitude that we know, again, can transform not just the approach and delivery of care, but also needs to be conducive with the branding that's been in place for so many years and is part of Encompass.
Yeah, number one, it starts with the clinical case. What is the purpose? What is the expected outcome for the clinical utilization of a product? Closely after that comes the business case. Does this make sense from a business perspective? And are we going to be able to drive an ROI here from the business case? Immediately after that is security and technology review. We have a rigorous program to review technologies to make sure that not only are they effective at doing what they say they can do, but can they do that in a way that protects our patients' data, privacy, which it's a huge issue today. More and more stories about problems in the security and privacy world. And so starts with clinical case and the business case, and then a security review. Then we do a pilot to make sure that we know how to deploy it well, that we can do it effectively. And then we continue to scale as opportunities present themselves, but all the while being cautious about causing too much disruption in our day-to-day work.
Okay, so definitely a clear line of sight with the expectations that a vendor has to go through, so to speak, and they need to clearly be accommodating to the fact that you guys have mechanisms in place, security measures, IT protocols, it sounds like you mentioned as well, which really led me to another follow-up, it sounds like you hit, which is as it relates to securitization, we've seen waivers, now I believe we're on a couple of them here that it's been renewed, and we have many organizations who come on board with Cinzi, but who had otherwise used a non-compliant technology. Talk to me about what your thoughts are, because we have a lot of folks who are on this webinar today who are in consideration and thinking about it and want to know what it was like to shift in the mentality of, hey, we are allowed to use it now versus being forward thinking. And is this the right move, not just now, but for the future when the waiver no longer exists?
Yeah, it's a balance. But at the end of the day, we're trying to prepare for the long run. And so we felt like pretty quickly we needed to, we knew this was going to be part of our future. Some technology to help us provide care in this way to patients was going to be part of our future. And so we didn't want to get too far behind. And privacy and security is critical. And though we might have a waiver to protect us from the regulatory issues that can come from using a non-compliant technology, nobody wants to put patient data at risk. Nobody wants to put their businesses at risk in that way long-term. And so it's a pretty easy decision to start thinking about compliant technologies and how things are going to be moving forward.
Yep. So with that, obviously we, you know, as a client partner of an organization who does believe similarly in the securitization and kind of the future proofing, if you will, of ensuring the patient security is at the utmost, not just secure, but simple and easy to use. Why was it, can you share why Cinzi was selected as the virtual care provider for Encompass?
I think there are a number of reasons. We had some good recommendations from folks we know in the industry who had used Cinzi before. It's always important to me. It's a small, home health is a small world in hospice, small industries. Everybody kind of knows everybody. And so I had some good recommendations. I got to know you guys and leadership at Cinzi pretty well. That really helped me relax in the communication that we had. Building that relationship, I think, is always important. I know that if there's an issue, I can go to you. I can go to the guys in leadership. And that's helpful to know. But then when we sit down to look at those three things, the clinical case, the business case, and the security review, it was clear that it met our criteria to consider it. And so we went into it in a limited scope, trying to understand if we could actually bring this kind of technology into our culture of care, into our clinical identity, both for home health, hospice, and even in our care management division. And the response has been really good. And so we're excited. It's not always that case with all vendors. And so I think the ongoing customer service and response that I get, and I'm not trying to do a commercial for Cinzi here, but thus far, the customer service and the outreach, the relationship has been honestly just as important as the clinical benefits and the technological benefits. It's good to know that you have somebody you can work closely with and you can get a timely response if you need it. It goes a long way.
Right. Yep. And the inverse of that would be that there wouldn't have been an expansion of adoption had that not been the case. And so the reason I ask is for that sort of, you know, two-way communication and ensuring that, you know, the expectation doesn't go away. And you know, those are relationships that are, you know, longstanding when the lines of communication are remaining open like that. And so I appreciate you mentioning there the several different use cases, which was really leading me to within the process of vetting and really that journey of telehealth. With remote patient monitoring, do you foresee that to be a large adoption, a large undertaking that you guys have? I know you said it, you want it to be non-intrusive and you want it to, you know, be a little more passive. What do you foresee just as kind of to circle back on that process and where are you guys at today with that? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, we really haven't changed on that. So we're continuing to look for technologies that can meet our criteria and be deployed in a way that are complementary. I do think that as we go forward over the next months and years, RPM, and telehealth, patient engagement technologies, along with predictive analytics, machine learning, which we've been working with for many years, actually, those are going to continue to become more and more part of the everyday process of care for home health and for hospice agencies. I think it's inevitable. Now, what exactly that looks like, I don't have a crystal ball, and you know, technologies change pretty rapidly, but we have a framework for what we want And I think that's really important. Before we start talking to vendors and talking to technology companies, we try to have an idea of what we're looking for. Now, people surprise us sometimes with things we hadn't thought of, but I think it's really important to bring a framework. What do you, as a home health agency, as a hospice agency, as a group that does care management, what do you see as your need for technology? I would rather set up a framework and find something that fits within my framework than find a technology that completely changes how we provide our services. And so it's going to be an increasing part of what we do. I think that's kind of inevitable. I think it's a good thing. We're going to learn a lot. We're going to gain efficiencies, hopefully, from doing that. The ability to provide more touch points to patients and react to data collected from patients that is more holistic than just a visit every couple of days is going to be a game changer. And so we'll have to figure out how to do that and execute on that in a way that's effective, that drives better outcomes, more efficiencies, and helps us grow as a business.
Right. Yeah. So certainly beginning with the end in mind is of critical importance, and driving that framework to start certainly can give you that line of sight with what it is that you're even looking for, right? And then best case scenario, you find a feature or functionality you hadn't maybe considered, or you can pull up in the roadmap. So fantastic. So given the evolving landscape, okay, I won't say post-COVID any longer. I'll say COVID era. Given the evolving landscape in this new era of care delivery, so what are your thoughts on the future of post-acute care and how post-acute care is changing?
Well, it's a big topic, isn't it?
It is. And we only have an hour, but today, so.
I know. And this is an exciting topic for me. So I think the forces of change are already out there. There are things that are happening through more and more folks talking about SNF at home programs, enhanced home health programs, palliative care services, and figuring out how to do that. Hospital at home, unified PAC PPS, like there are a lot of signals out there that the post-acute care space is going to change. I even hate to think of it as post-acute care, right? Because many of our patients never have an acute care hospital encounter before they come to us. And I really don't love the word pre-acute either, because that almost foreshadows that there's going to be an acute hospitalization event. And the goal of really good home health and really good hospice services is high quality care that prevents those kind of transitions to ER and to the acute care hospital. Right. So I don't even have the right word to define it. change coming to post-acute care services. The role of the home health agency, the role of the hospice agency and care management services is going to continue to expand. We definitely see that. CMS, payers, multiple demonstrations are really focused on bringing the total cost of care down. And there is clearly a huge focus in the post-acute care space to bring the cost of care down. And so one way to do that is to provide as much care as clinically appropriate in the home, in the most affordable setting of care that there is. And so we definitely feel like that is going to continue to be the trend. Home health agencies have to prepare to take more complex patients, sicker patients, higher levels of acuity, and with greater impairments in body function and body structure. And we've been trying to prepare our agencies to do that for a very long time, and kind of seeing this coming, as have many other providers in the country. It's, you know, when I started in healthcare 20 plus years ago, I started in the hospital, and the kind of patients that we would send to home health compared to today has changed significantly. Not only that, but, you know, to think that you would have same day surgery joint replacements 20 years ago is we never even thought that way. And 20 years ago, when I started in the hospital, when you had a joint replacement surgery, your geometric mean length of stay for that particular DRG was 5 days. So you had 4 or 5 midnights in the hospital. And today it's an outpatient procedure for a hip or for a knee.
Right.
And so those patients come home more quickly. And in some cases, we're almost helping to recover those patients from surgery. And then at the same time, the complexity of patients coming home with multiple comorbidities, with procedures and more significant impairments, it's higher than it's ever been. And we've certainly seen COVID accelerate that. People have taken kind of a why not try home approach. And so we've had to ramp up. And I've heard the same from other agencies in the industry. Everybody is getting ready to take care of a higher acuity, higher complexity patient. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah. So with that, you know, obviously the expectation then shifts with that higher acuity patient, right? And kind of foreshadowing what's to come here. The writing's not just on the wall, you're also hearing it on the street, so to speak, in the community. And as you said, a very small community of home health professionals out there. So with that, as far as the expectation of how technologies are gonna support that effort with more acute patients within the home space, and again, having the experience mimic what that would be with the appropriate level of care, but within the home. How are you seeing technologies, supporting that effort? And what does that mean for you guys, really, in having to be forward thinking of how you're going to support that higher level acuity patient at home?
Yeah, the role of technology, like I said earlier, is definitely increasing. We need the ability to grab data from a patient and consistent data with more frequently than just the historical, you do a home visit every day or two, you collect vital signs, you enter them in. That's really just a snapshot of a patient's status at that time during that day. And the patient's trajectory of illness changes pretty significantly. And so patients decline or improve dramatically, sometimes on a daily basis. And without technology to help you collect data to recognize it, it's challenging to meet the needs of the healthcare environment we're in today. And so being able to see when someone is having a problem, being able to have more frequent touch points with them. So maybe fewer in-person visits, but more virtual connections, more data reviews, more touch points in terms of whatever channel they prefer, secure messaging, phone call, IVR, a true virtual visit where you're doing a video, whatever method of communication they prefer or their family prefers, being able to see when there is a problem or a visit is needed by exception is really important. So we think that is part of how home health services are going to change. There's also an opportunity if you're able to collect data on patients with a pretty consistent and short duty cycle. So collect, what if we could collect oxygen, heart rate, activity, some other vital signs? What if we could collect those in 5-minute increments? We hope it might be possible to predict when a clinical event might happen. And I think that's really important to the future of home-based care, to be able to see data and understand the data in a way that creates an actionable window of time to intervene, to mitigate a clinical event. Instead of waiting for something to happen and then responding, our hope is that technology is going to help us get to a point where we can see events are about to happen and we can get out there with a nurse or a therapist or the appropriate provider and intervene to mitigate that problem. That's going to help us keep patients out of the emergency room, keep patients out of the hospital. And that's really, really, really important to home health providers today and going forward.
Yeah, and so with that, there's the expectation. So you mentioned by way of, there's a mitigation process. There's an expectation, not just on the Encompass end of it, but also the patient and caregiver, family member, what have you, who's participating in that patient's care, which presumably could be, you know, three or four different participants within that. So in support of whether it's medication adherence reminders, whether it's, you know, a multitude of things that you just mentioned, what are you seeing or hearing as the expectation, not from the Encompass side, but what you're hearing from your patient census by way of, you know, are they open to the adoption of new technologies? And again, starting with the end in mind, are they clear on what it's going to do for them? It's going to mitigate, it's going to keep them out of the ERs, et cetera. How are you seeing that adopted or, you know, readily accepted?
Yeah, so we, that's a great question too. And we've been monitoring this for several years also. I had a Home Care Home Base is our EMR, and they've been a partner of ours for a very long time, our EMR partner for a very long time. And several years ago, I was talking with an executive there about the ability to use data and through messaging, through smartphones for patients. And his comment was, well, not that many of your patients know how to use a smartphone, right? Your average age of your patient, high 70s, at 77, 78 years old. And so I said, I don't know. I really don't know how many have smartphones, how many use them. I don't know. And that's a problem. And so several years ago, we started doing a once a year survey of our patient population. So we about once a year, we will ask for a period of about 30, 45 days, every start of care, we'll get a question set that asks the question, do you have a smartphone or a tablet? Do you text? Do you email? Do you have access to Wi-Fi? And when we first started doing that survey several years ago, the affirmative rate was around 50%, which was higher than we thought it was. So about half of our patients were using smartphones, they were texting, they were emailing, they were playing Candy Crush. It's not one of our questions.
But they had it, they had it.
Yeah. Survey every year. And what we've seen is it steadily increases. The percentage of patients who now, the last time we did it, it was closer to 65% of our patients will have access to those kinds of technologies. So that opens a lot of doors, right? We started using IVR, interactive voice response calls to patients several years ago as well. And the adoption rate's pretty good. The response rate's pretty good. With that, we've seen it increase as well over time. In terms of the newer technologies and virtual visits, our teams have actually been really impressed. It's well over 50% of our patients want or are accepting of virtual visits and participate in them. And so we've been really happy. In the pandemic, we have seen some of our patients even request, can we do this next encounter virtually? So that's been interesting. So I think acceptance and adoption of these technologies is changing. It's improving. I don't like to have phone calls. I really don't. I don't like somebody calling me. I'd much rather have a message that I can respond to, a text message that I can respond to. I deplore robocalls. And so I don't answer those. And so we have patients the same way and families who are the same way. And they're afraid to be scammed. They're afraid something's happening. It's inappropriate. And so they won't answer a phone call. And so I think having a multi-channel approach and trying to meet patients where they are is important. I don't think you're going to see Encompass Health have try to implement a one-size-fits-all approach because it just doesn't work. There's too much variation out there. Patients have their own preferences. And I promise you, we will have a significant percentage of our patients who will just flat say, I will never do a visit over a virtual visit. I'll never do IVR. I won't text with you. Call me the night before and come see me the day of my appointment. And so we're not going to tell those people, well, then we can't care for you. We're going to meet them where they are. And that's something that's really important, is that patient-centered approach to care. But to do that, you've got to understand what that patient wants and what their ability is to engage.
Yeah, and patient-centric is really, I would agree, that's hitting it on the head. Which is putting the patient in the center of that plan of care, truly putting them at the center, which is multiple modalities, you know, not shoving anything down their throat, if you will, of a certain IVR, of a phone call, all of a virtual visit, because all patients, or no two patients, should I say, are alike. To the extent they have a different expectation, they have a different level of experience, and they have a different awareness even of technologies, right? There's still some rotary phone users, right? And we hear about those, and we have to respect the fact that there is no one shoe that's going to fit the entire census. And so, yes. So thank you for mentioning that, because it also brings up another great point, which is the expectation of the delivery of care, because you are in Texas. And for those who don't know, our participants here, Texas, I'm sure, unless you were under a rock, just had a very, very traumatic experience as it relates to weather. So what were you guys seeing, and how did that affect your guys' delivery of care during those storms last week?
Yeah, we have locations in over 30 states. And so in those states, we've had a variety of different natural disasters and emergencies over the last 20 plus years. We've had wildfires, we've had hurricanes repeatedly, tornadoes, power outages, ice storms, floods. It's an all too common event, it seems. And so we're pretty well familiar with our processes around emergency preparedness. Here in Texas last week, it was a unique situation where it was extremely cold. And for some of you on the call, maybe 2 degrees is normal for you in the winter. I can tell you in Texas, it is not. And so it was debilitatingly cold. It overwhelmed our power system. And so we had parts of the state that were without power for extended periods. Then we had problems with the water supply. And so it was a significant event for sure. We have a process in place that we built out a long time ago. And when CMS changed the emergency response plan requirements, we thought it was a good thing. We implemented it very, very quickly. And so we have a process that we go through. We know which patients are more vulnerable. So we know which patients are on oxygen, which patients require power for their ongoing safety. And so we triage, we reach out, we make phone visits and make in-person visits to make sure everyone's safe and help them get to somewhere where they can be safe. So there wasn't too much disruption from that perspective. It was challenging with the roads also being icy to be able to do that care. And so we did make a lot of phone calls. We made a lot of virtual visits, but ultimately we were able to make sure our patients were okay. Everybody rallies around those situations, and thankfully wasn't too much harm.
Yep. And which is exactly why those mechanisms are in place. So I would wholeheartedly agree that it's important not just to have a mechanism in place, but the one that CMS has put into place makes sense, and there it is. So yeah. as the innovation officer, I know, you know, you've seen different experiences. It sounds like you've seen everything from a flood to an earthquake, and everything. It sounds like you guys have been covered. It's that kind of sounds like that State Farm commercial.
No earthquakes yet.
Oh, no earthquakes. My apologies. I'm from California originally. That was me. So with that, as the innovation officer, I know that's something that you are also looking at with a very close lens there to see if there's a way in the future, right, should it ever dip to 2 degrees again or what have you regionally, how technology is going to be embraced and what exactly you can do to get out in front of these type of natural disasters that, you know, we don't always see coming or seldom or ever see coming. With that, you said, you know, when you talked about the incremental adoption and the increased adoption from whether it was the survey going out and getting a result at 50%, up to 65%, et cetera. Would you agree that's going to continue to grow and that's just going to further support the need and the awareness and the reason you guys are really shifting toward more innovation?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think in the future, as there's more and more adoption of smartphone technologies, and you see it with Amber Alerts, in Texas, we call them silver alerts when something happens with an elderly person and they go missing. And so we definitely see an opportunity to take technology and be able to do mass messaging and get information out to large groups just to make sure everyone is aware of a potential issue to make sure that they are aware that we're here to help them and make sure that they know what steps to take to be safe. And I think more and more healthcare providers will be engaging in those kinds of technologies. There is something that we need to think about, which is over communication to patients from multiple channels. And so we, from multiple providers, and there are some markets that we operate in, and I'm sure this is true of others on the webinar as well, where a patient is getting phone calls from an ACO, from a healthcare system, from a hospital, from a rehab facility, from a home health provider, from their PCP, and they're just like, enough, sure. enough with the phone calls, yeah. Enough with the care coordination. And so one of our challenges that we've really got to figure out, and I'm probably going to have to lean on the vendors and folks that we work with, like you guys, is to figure out a way to make sure that we're not overwhelming our patients and populations with these messages, because I get nervous about alarm fatigue, just like in a hospital system when I was in CCU providing physical therapy for patients. There's alarms going off constantly. Eventually, you kind of get numb to that, and it concerns me. So there is that part of technology too that we're all going to have to be thoughtful about in how we engage the patient. Who's taking the lead in engaging the patient? Mm-hmm. What's the best way to do that and then communicate externally so that we don't have 5, 6, 7 groups bombarding patients with phone calls and text and IVR?
Yep. And where that patient's line in the sand is drawn, since again, all patients are different, and what's their expectation? That's a great point. So with that, I'd be remiss not to bring up a looming potential shift. It could be a seismic shift there by way of what we know as the HEDAP. So how is care delivery shifting from the hospital, from the expectation that there is a looming HEDAC and what the impacts could possibly be of that for Encompass?
The HEDAC being the bill that's potentially looking to reimburse for telehealth services.
That's right. Yep. Yep. For those not aware, potentially to reimburse for telehealth services.
Yeah. And I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful. I think it would go a long way to helping transform post-acute care, especially home health care. One of the hangups with being able to implement and deploy technology like this is the ROI. We look at the clinical ROI, and then we look at outcomes. We want to make sure it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. But then we also, as a business, have to make sure we're being good stewards of those resources. And so when there's no reimbursement for it and it's an added cost, it is a challenge to deploy it. And so it ends up typically being kind of a as needed. But to the extent that there was reimbursement for it, I think that would open a lot of opportunities for agencies like ours and others to take the technology and really embed it into a patient-centered care plan. When it's appropriate for the patient, which means you've got to know when you can use it, make sure the patient has not only the cognitive ability to interact with it appropriately, but also the physical ability to interact with it appropriately. Consent and patient-informed consent for the patient is really, really critical for these kinds of technologies. And so when the patient consents, when they want to engage with a technology like this, we want to be able to meet those needs. And we think we can drive better outcomes. Having a payment source behind it will certainly help to offset the cost of deployment and make it more widespread.
Right. Yep. Yeah. So I wanted to bring that up because, again, it's looming, and whether it will or will not take effect, the underlying goal is always going to be our expectation. I won't call it a goal. Expectation is still going to be to have a patient-centric experience. So that's why I wanted to hear your take on the HEDAC and the impact of the agencies that you guys have and deal with, in knowing it could be a seismic shift, sure. But you guys are already, it sounds like, ahead of that. And by way of innovation, it sounds like you guys have really taken the step to future-proof, we could say, to set the framework for what could be, potentially a better ROI than what you're seeing today.
Yeah, we want to be prepared. We want to be ready if a change does come, we want to be ready to deploy and take advantage of that change. I did see a chat message, the HEAT Act, where someone was asking what that is. H-E-A-T, HEAT Act. It's Home Health Emergency Access to Telehealth. I believe as it stands today, that would allow home health agencies to utilize telehealth services and count it as visits for the care plan under the public health emergency. So I'm hopeful for a more longer term solution to this. And we are seeing some payers come on board and reimburse for telehealth services during the public health emergency. But we're also hearing that they're anticipating continuing to reimburse for the services, which is great. Change takes time, and there's a lot of skepticism. Sure. And so one thing we've all got to be doing right now is we've got to make sure we're very judicious, very thoughtful, and making sure that when we deploy these services, that they are clinically appropriate. I think everybody, I'm sure, has seen some of the work plan for OIG is focusing on telehealth services. Sure. We need to make sure as an industry that we're doing this the right way and that we don't give Medicare and the OIG reason to search and find problems. They're skeptical, yep, worried about misuse. And so as an industry, we got to police ourselves. We got to make sure we're doing this the right way. But there is a role. And so when we can deploy it, we really need reimbursement to make sure we can do that in a way that's super effective.
Right. And coincides with the ROI expectation. Yep, absolutely. So with that, sounds like we just caught one of them. I'm going to open it up for questions. And again, let me take a look here. If anybody has anything as far as participants, please go ahead and chat them now. If there's something that Bud has not covered, we'd be happy to entertain it at this time. Let me look here. I think there was another question, but we had already answered it, which was, where are you providing your home care services here in the U.S.? I believe, did you say 31 states, Bud?
Gosh, I've got to go back. Look, I think 32 states now for home health services, home health and hospice services. I believe we're in 32.
Okay, 32. Yep. Very good. So, Bud, I want to give you this one last opportunity here for closing remarks as it relates to innovation. Again, your role there at Encompass Health. Before I wrap it up, I'd like to give you the last stab at it here and give you an opportunity to close out what your thoughts are regarding innovation and really the future of what we're looking at for the home health patient.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you for the time today. It's always fun for me to talk about this stuff. I think I wish I had a crystal ball. I wish I knew exactly where we were headed. I think the one thing we can count on is it's going to continue to change and evolve. And so I think our responsibility as providers is to look for data-driven, evidence-based approaches to care, look for opportunities to implement them in ways that provide better outcomes for patients and families, efficient for our agencies and an ROI and reduce the overall total cost of care. I think that's my task, is to look for technologies and to look for innovation opportunities that drive better results and that make us more efficient, more effective, and reduce the overall cost of care to the Medicare system and to the other payers that we work with. And I think doing that through a very thoughtful, pragmatic, again, we're never on the bleeding edge, but we want to be fast followers when we see something really good. But doing that in a way that's thoughtful, pragmatic, that checks all the boxes related to patients' privacy, security. That's what we're trying to do. That's all of our challenge. And so we got to be careful about getting too far ahead, but I also don't want to get too far behind. And that's where that crystal ball really come in handy, Edward, if I had that.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you've been out on the forefront with a lot of this. I know you keep saying fast followers, but certainly you guys are also cutting edge in many ways and kind of leading with being able to future-proof yourself up to this point. So I will take that. And again, really appreciate your time. Wealth of information, Bud. Always great to talk to you. So we do appreciate it. So With that, please visit cinzi.com to learn more or sign up for a demo of the platform. Be happy to accommodate. And this concludes our Cinzi Spotlight presentation with Bud Langham and Compass Health. So thank you, Bud.
Thank you. You guys have a great day.